From radio.
Hello.
We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond.
This is Radio Art 106. I am Meira Asher. I bring you an interview with Palestinian activist Maher Al-Akhras, recorded on November 12, 2020. He reflects upon his 103-day hunger strike in protest at his administrative detention. After 5 petitions were rejected by the Israeli High Court of Justice, Maher Al-Akhras decided to stop his hunger strike once he was guaranteed by the General Security Services, also known as the Shabak, that his administrative detention will end on its original date, November 26, 2020, and will not be extended. The interview was recorded at the Kaplan Medical Center in Israel. Maher Al-Akhras, a father of 6 from the village of Silet Adaher in the occupied West Bank, was arrested on July 28, 2020. On August 7, he was placed under administrative detention for 4 months. Al-Akhras began his hunger strike on the day of his arrest and was hospitalized at Kaplan Medical Center from September 6, following a severe deterioration in his health. His condition led the High Court of Justice to temporarily freeze his detention. But Al-Akhras continued his strike, demanding that his detention be revoked entirely. He repeatedly refused medical treatment. Al-Akhras' final court hearing took place on October 28, 2020. The justices dismissed the petition on the grounds that Al-Akhras chooses to go on hunger strike after announcing that he would end it if he was transferred to a hospital in the West Bank or East Jerusalem. Although the justices recognized that Al-Akhras's life is in real danger, they ruled that the hunger strike in itself had no bearing on the decision regarding the administrative detention. How are you? Do you feel relieved?
الراحة الوحيدة إنه الواحد بكيف في بيته بين أهله وبين شعبه وكب حريته كاملة. الحرية منقوصة كثير هس يعني. أنا مش حر بالخروج من هون.
The only relief is that the person's at home with his family and his people. In that, he's going to be completely free. The freedom I have is not perfect now. There's much that lacks. I'm not free to get out of the hospital because I must continue to receive treatments until I recover or until it's going to be 26th of November when I'm allowed to leave. There's no other choice. This, of course, limits freedom.
How is your family feeling?
عائلتي مبسوطة إنهم يعني تم إنقاذ حياتي يعني بعد ما شافوا إنه كنت متعرض للموت بأي وقت يعني. في الخص يعني امي واولاد الصغار مبسوطين بس قاعدين بيشوفوني صرت اقدر اتكلم منيح.
My family's happy because, well, that is, my life was saved. After seeing that I was going to die at any moment, especially my mother and my small children. They're happy again after seeing that I was started to speak well and I could get to recognize them again. That is, they stopped seeing the sad sights that they had seen before. They're happy, but they want to see me at home.
What do you plan to do when you go back home?
When I return home, I want first, of course, to take care of my children, to compensate them for the deprivation they've lived through during this difficult time. Especially the little girl, Tuka. Until now, she goes through mental difficulties. She's not quiet, she's unable to go back to school. She's 6 years old. I want to get her out of this mood from the soldiers' entry into the house and when they tore her out of my arms. Until now, she's under the influence of what happened. I want to get her out of this situation. The most important point for me is my little girl.
Is this the first time that she has seen soldiers?
It was the first time with this level of cruelty. And of course, my mother as well. She suffered a lot. And the reason for stopping the strike for me is because my mother, she told me, enough, I will die and you will die after me. At this moment, I could not. And because of that, I stopped the strike. Without that, I would not stop striking until I was home. But because of the little kids and because of my mother, I stopped the strike. I want to compensate them for this difficult time they went through, their mental state, and bring them back to the best. Until now, they've not returned to themselves, especially in their relationship with other people. I want to return them to their natural state as they were before. And then I have a second plan. Now I'll tell you about it. Then I'll direct all my effort and thoughts to the issues of the people. Whoever is harmed, I'll stand by them, and I will not change. I have no connection to parties or fronts. I will comfort my people, and if I can, I will comfort every person in the world who demands freedom. Everybody who deals with a problem, I'll be by his side.
Will you now become more politically involved in your community?
It's a natural thing, my whole life. My life from the day I know myself. I'm involved in the struggles of my people. I care about the weak people, the houses that are demolished. When I see a martyr killed by the occupation soldiers, I can't sleep for several nights. These families, if I see them crying over the houses and their sons, it made me very sad, even if they were not members of my religion and even if they're not from my nationality. I don't forget anyone. My connection with the people remains very close and strong. It has been years that I stand by their side, and they don't forget it. This is why there was popular solidarity with me. We will continue to stand by our people until we win a free life and defeat the occupation. Each of us will do it in our own way. But my way is to comfort the people and the weakened, those who face disasters. I will be by their side, I and every free person in the world. And I ask you and every free person in the world to continue to stand by us.
Is hunger strike a powerful weapon when challenging injustice?
فيش طريق قدامنا غير هذا الطريق، فيش سلاح ثاني نستخدمه، نستخدم سلاح صعب جدا، مؤلم 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 جدا.
Well, we have no other way. There's no other weapon at our disposal. We use a very hard weapon. It's painful, 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 very painful. I look, every day that passed, I suffered greatly with terrible fatigue, but I didn't show it to anybody, especially in front of my enemies, in front of the occupation. I couldn't show my pain, and I did not show that I was affected. I wanted to upset them with my stability, and I saw that this is a very powerful weapon, despite the pain it caused me.
But as a weapon, the last weapon available, is it really as powerful as considered by the people in this local context?
نعم قوي جدا لأنه يعني للأسف الشديد عدونا يعني الاحتلال هو برضو ذكي لو بده يصبر حتى الواحد يموت عليه ولا أي شيء بقدرش يتحمل المسؤولية اللي بيصير بعدها.
Yeah, it's very strong because unfortunately, well, it moves our enemy because the occupation is also smart. If it waits until the prisoner dies or something happens to him, then it will bear responsibility for what comes after. Therefore, it's smart. It doesn't let you get to death because it solves things a moment before death. We deal with a smart enemy who also works in a smart way. He doesn't kill us in front of the cameras of the world, but in a smart way he deals with us.
A hunger strike is a weapon. Like all weapons, it is potentially deadly. It is solely used by the powerless against the powerful. The powerless have no recourse to divisions of armed soldiers or planes raining death on school children when their legitimate grievances are ignored by the powerful, so they use their body. And most importantly, they use their morality and their mind in the struggle to come. Of all the weapons available to humans, the hunger strike is perhaps the most moral. It does not want or attempt to harm a single other human. It seeks to shine a light on injustice. It seeks to let the powerful know that, despite their power, they cannot trample the desire for justice when a man or woman refuses to bow, refuses to live in a state of subjugation. In a continuum from Terence McSweeney to Bobby Sands to Maher al-Akhras, its validity and morality has been solidified and entrenched. The powerful fear the hunger strike. They have no answer to its call for justice.
وبحطنا في المستشفى عشان يورجي العالم انه هو حضاري وانه بيهتم في الاسير الفلسطيني.
And he puts us in hospitals to show how civilized he is and that he cares for the Palestinian prisoner. But he puts us in hospitals to show how sympathetic he is with the Palestinian people, to show that he's human. But it doesn't matter if you're in hospital or prison. Suffering is the same suffering no matter.
The campaign around your hunger strike started quite late. Should a hunger striker have their campaign organized from the very beginning?
أنا رأيي بالعكس يعني أنا قبل ما عندما أجوا اعتقلوني من البيت أخبرت زوجتي بس تعاملوا معنا الجنود بهاي الطريقة الوحشية إنه أنا مضرب وعلني وقلت لها أعلني عشان يبقى تضامن يعني ويبقى في أخبار تتداول بس للأسف الشديد العالم منحاز
No, my opinion is the opposite. Before they came to arrest me, I told my wife when the soldiers behaved with us in this cruel way, I told her I'm starting a hunger strike and I asked her to publicize it so that there'll be solidarity and people will know and speak about it. But unfortunately, the world mainly accepts the abominable occupation. If there's no strong civil solidarity and pressure on the important world media, they're not interested because their solidarity with Israel is blind.
طيب طبيعة صلاة المحارب في المعركة هي اللي بتفرض شو نتائج المعركة وهي اللي بتفرض أخبارها لو ما كانت صلابتي وثباتي ما صارش هذا الموقف اللي يعني فضح إسرائيل في العالم
The tough character of the warrior in battle, he's the one who dictates the results of the battle, and he's the one who dictates the narrative around it. The toughness and stability of my stance exposed Israel to the world. This Palestinian insistence on principles with no change of mind. This is what generates a powerful echo through the media, and that's what forces the world to be interested in my struggle. Unfortunately, many hunger strikers before me didn't get to the point where they could generate this media echo. They didn't persevere as I persevered, and that's what the Shabak thought. They thought that I wouldn't last, but they were exposed. It blew them every time they rejected.
True. This is how I felt at the time. It's a complex task. To plan the campaign in such a way to create maximum pressure on the system. On which day of an open hunger strike is best to start?
Well, we can't be sure that the prisoner will continue the strike until he reaches, say, at least 20, 30 days. Then we can say that he was stubborn and he managed to get through the difficult period. The most difficult period is between the 20th to the 40th day. During this period, the fatigue is strong, it's very strong. If you manage to endure between the 20th and the 40th day, I would say that you can continue for longer. It depends on the health of the person. Many before me, their health did not let them bear it. But unfortunately, when the people outside stop hearing about the prisoner and what he has to say, when there's secrecy around his case, it affects him, of course, that there's nobody. It causes a negative effect on him. The people outside have to put pressure to meet with him. If they meet the prisoner, they take strength from him. And this is what moves them. I say that the prisoner himself should be strong and that his resolve will not change from day one. But he gets strength from popular support and from international solidarity. When people hear directly from him, it's better. When they hear from him, it's better. But unfortunately with us, the authority sends people and activists from the Palestinian movements who tell you not to talk to anybody. This is what the occupation wants, that we do not talk. Well, how can we not talk? How will you show that you've been wronged?
Do you think there are any limits to the power of hunger striking?
Yeah, the challenges are numerous, especially what people say. For example, when my strike continued, I started to hear bad words, like, why do you insist, or do you want to die? From people I know, these are difficult challenges. The second thing is the family, the stress of the family. When they allow us to see the family and you see their weakness, it affects you very much. But after this time, I noticed and insisted on telling them, if I see you dead, I will not stop. If the whole world speaks against me, I warn you, my strike will continue until liberation. This time I gave in to you, to the people, to my parents, but to whoever is talking next time, I will not listen to anyone. I will continue until I break them, God willing.
A few weeks ago, we talked and I told you that I think that it can be counterproductive to die on hunger strike, because it becomes the new standard for the next hunger striker.
In the struggle of mine, I say in this battle, in this war, in every war, even if it's in the army, the withdrawal from battle is a defeat. In any case, it is a defeat. In this struggle, even if I die, it will be considered a victory. I recommend to anybody who wants to get into such a struggle to take death into account above any thoughts of being released. You shouldn't do any other calculation.
اللي صار معي أنا بالذات يعني قلت لك أنا مستمر حتى لو لآخر رمق. أنا لو بدي أخذ هذا الخراف أخذ يعني القرار هذا ووقف إضرابي بأخذه على 4 أشهر اللي هي أروح 26/11 بس مش بضل مش في أنا.
Well, what happened to me, especially to me, I told you, I will continue to the end. I am, if I believe them, then I would stop the strike after 4 months, or I go home on the 26th of November. But there was no trust. At the last meeting, they came from the PA and they called from Gaza, requesting me to stop the strike. Based on an understanding that I'm 100% going home, and there'll be no second administrative order, as if it's not a game. There were witnesses to all this talk. My mother was very stressed for 2 days. She pressured me, and then I found a compromise. Everybody witnessed the agreement, and I stopped the strike.
What do you think about the judicial system of the occupation regime? You had 5 petitions which were rejected.
هذا القضاء عند الاحتلال كان في قضية الإداري ولا في القضايا العادية هي تمثيلية على العالم وعلى الشعب الفلسطيني.
The judicial system of the occupation, whether in administrative detention or in ordinary cases, it's a show to the world and to the Palestinian people. Unfortunately, we agree with what's happening and we applaud it. We, the Palestinians, before the world.
بيجي الشباك بعدين بعد سنة سنتين ثلاثة بقول لهم لحونا وخلص بس يفوت عند القاضي بقول له خلص هذا آخر تمديد إليك ومثل ما بقول الشباك.
They will come to you from the Shabak after a year, 2-3 years, and they'll tell you this is enough, that's it. And when you come to court, the judge tells you this is the last extension, as the Shabak said. The Shabak comes to you and tells you that this is the last time we extend your administrative detention. You will go to court, and they will tell you this is the last time we extend, every time. Every time it happened to me and every prisoner.
واحنا للأسف الشديد روحت على المحكمة وخذت قرار جوهري. أنا عارف إنه الشباك اللي بقرر بس إحنا للأسف الشديد بس الواحد روح على المحكمة خلص بيصدق إنه الشباك إنه خلص أوعد ووعده مزبوط والقضاء أقر. يعني القضاء ما بطلش وبيصدق الفيلم اللي عايشه وبيصدق.
And we unfortunately, like a prisoner will say to himself, I was in court and I received a serious sentence, but I know that the Shabak decides. A prisoner goes to court and believes that the Shabak promised them, and the Shabak kept its promise and the court agreed, as if the court did not break the Shabak's word. And the prisoner believes in the film he lives in, and I'm amazed that the prisoner himself, who lives in this film and cooperates with it.
Why are there so many administrative arrests? Why 350 now? Why?
لأنه مش حدا يرد إسرائيل عن جهيتها. لأنه إحنا ضعاف. الأسرى الفلسطينيين ضعاف. ولا واحد منهم بتجرأ. أنا جربوا معي حوالي بجوز 30 واحد 25 واحد طلعوا معي على الزنازيل وأنا في زنازيل عوفر قعدت 32 يوم.
Because nobody will stop Israel or stand up to its arrogance because we're weak. The Palestinian prisoners are weak. None of them dare. Maybe 25, 30 prisoners joined me. They tried to strike with me. They came with me to the cells in Ofer prison. I was there for 32 days. I saw about 35 prisoners who started a strike, 2 days, 3 days, at most 18 days. Then they get tired and they say it's hard.
Is administrative detention more severe than routine arrest? Or are they actually the same thing?
الاعتقال بغض النظر كله نفس الإشي بس الاعتقال الإداري بظل نفسيا مش مرتاحة مش عارف وين التاريخ ومش عارف شو بصير معاه ومش عارف على إيش ظلم متركب فوق ظلم.
The arrest doesn't matter, everything's the same, but the administrative detention is different. You live in a bad mood, you don't know when's your release date, you don't know what will happen to you, you don't know what you're arrested for. There's injustice upon injustice. Parents wait 4 months or 6 months or even 2 months. They, the parents, out there are under pressure. Not just the prisoner himself, but the parents, the relatives and friends, they're all under pressure. Administrative detention is like a bleeding wound, not a wound that heals. So yeah, administrative detention is harder. It's not only symbolic because it's illegal. It really is tougher than the usual arrests.
The administrative detention policy is a stark violation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which prohibits the arbitrary arrest, detention, or exile of any person under Article 9. Israel continues to place Palestinians under administrative detention based on secret material that can't be disclosed. Administrative detention hinders the Palestinian detainees' right to present and build a fair defense guaranteed under Article 10 of the UDHR. Neither the detainees nor their lawyers are allowed to know the charges or view the prosecution's evidence. Administrative detention orders are reviewed every 6 months and are often indefinitely extended. According to the Adamir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, as of November 2020, Israel was holding 4,400 Palestinian prisoners, 380 of them in administrative detention.
لا يعني حتى في الاعتقال الاداري بتصير تظن انت بجاره انه هو اللي عمل عليك شيء بتصير تظن بالناس اخرى يعني بتصير تعمل لك مشاكل خلال السنين او الاشهر بتقعدها بتصير تظن باقرب الناس عليك انه هو اللي بيعمل فيك.
Yeah, true, it's harder. In administrative detention, you even start to suspect your neighbor. He's the one who did something to you. You start to suspect people. You're in trouble with people while in jail. You start to suspect the person closest to you that maybe he reported you.
صير حتى الواحد ثقته في الناس مش مليحة. صير يظن إنه كل الناس أعداء له بيعملوا عليه إشي يعني مع اليهود.
You begin to lose faith in people. You begin to suspect that all people are your enemies and are collaborating with the Jews against you.
صير يظن بأصحابه. بصير يظن بأخوه. بصير يظن بخليش حدا اللي صير يظن فيه. أنت مشكلت مع فلان. أنت مشكلت مع فلان. بصيروا يسمعوك بأسماء. عشان تدخلوك جو تعب وفي ناس بتروح بتتكاتل هي والناس تكاتل ومرات بصير موت.
Yeah, maybe somebody will start to suspect his friends, his brothers. He will suspect everybody. Sometimes the Shabak mentions names. For example, they'll tell you you've got a problem with somebody to make you weary. And the many people who went and fought with other people, and sometimes there's deaths, nobody knows why. I'm talking about cases I know because it's happened to me.
If the occupation imposes on you administrative detention again, what will you do?
مستحيل يعني سأضرب. لو هسه اليوم ردوا يطبوا فيي هون انا بضرب طوالي. لو ردوا هسه يحاولوا يطبوا فيي بضرب.
No way. I mean, I will hunger strike. If they touch me today, I will immediately declare a strike. If they come here and try to do something to me, whether it's to arrest me or anything else, I will go on hunger strike a second time. Immediately, yeah, I will restart using this heavy weapon.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radia.fm. Over and out.
Days full of rain, skies coming down again. I get so tired of these same old blues, same old song. Baby, it won't be long, for I'll be tying on my flying shoes. Flying shoes till I be tying on my flying shoes. Spring only sighed, summer had to be satisfied. Fall is a feeling that I just can't lose. I'd like to stay, maybe watch a winter day turn the green water white and blue flying shoes, flying shoes, till I be tying on my flying shoes. Get so tired of these same old blues, same old song. Baby, it won't be long till I be tying on my flying shoes, flying shoes. Till I be tying on.
Hello, this is a show from Radia. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners.
Delta 2 Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Each week we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond.
Delta 2 Yankee, Delta 2 Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Are you up for it?
Dear radio listeners, what is illegal for you? Do we cross the borders of legality by listening? We invite you to pursue these questions and to get lost with it.
Once, there was a brawl between two brothers.
Knocking on my flesh.
And one of them lost his life. The clan had found the victor responsible for each other's death and ordered him executed. Words of this verdict reached the guilty man in his hiding place. He summoned his friends and explained the situation. His brother had swindled him and afterwards. During the scuffle, his brothers succumbed to his wounds. The listeners then resolved to form a delegation that would address such allegations in the future. After considering the circumstances, solution would be arrived at by common consent. Not all, they declared the clan no longer decide on its own. He would henceforward be excluded from the proceedings. He would only be notified once the verdict had been reached, and his role would be merely to accept this verdict. That happened long ago, and that is the tradition.
Being mobile. No man's land.
Thank you.
nigdy nie poligiśmy. Wiru kanonienien, a podemi kanonsus i galki. A bejtu dada, która ma wej, jest akono. Lej fada, illegal.
All the arts which they are not in contact or under the condition of producing community or privileged arts, they're illegal. Illegals and outsider arts. And I'm going to make connection between illegal art with illegal people, the so-called illegal immigrants. They have to reorganize themselves around a main point: how to build, how to rebuild, how to resurrection a political subject for our social movement, for our freedom, for our emancipation. We need this united and union between the so-called illegal art with illegal immigrants. And the illegal art or secret art should attract immigrants. Only focusing on the already radicalized art. I'm not optimist about the art in general concept, in general sense. I'm talking and interested in already radicalized art, the art which has its connection to marginalized people. Marginalized people are actually not only immigrants today. I'm not only talking about immigrant people. I'm talking about working class, poor people, and the people who they have no any function for producing communities. Or in a Marxist point of view, we can brand them like unproductive labor. And the art, street art, or radicalized art should materialize this materiality. Once Banksy notes that illegality led him to develop the use of stainless to increase efficiency, he said, "As I lay there listening to the curbs on the tracks, I realized I had to cut my painting time in half or give up altogether. I was staring straight up at the stainless plate on the bottom of the train's fuel tank when I realized I could just copy that style and make each letter 3 feet high. Yet street artists often aim for risk, danger, and audacity gained from illegality in the materiality and meanings of artworks."
I'm based in Iran, female, and born a Muslim and raised here. Everything to be an artist for me here is illegal, no matter where, when, and how. Actually, I believe I'm living illegally. Yeah. Yeah, in my country, everything that is about against religion and government rules are illegal. And my personal experience since I was a little kid, I was a disorder or a noise. So this was my feeling apart from these days.
perspective of the authority or ruling class, all the movements and all the uprisings of people from below are noisy for them, and they have never been heard by people. They have to be suppressed, they have to be controlled, and they have to talk really low without noisy sounds. It means illegality, or I would say we can translate illegality into noisy. All the movements are illegal or are noisy sounds for the state of authorities and ruling classes. It means we have never be heard by people. We have to just suppress our sound from the below, from the marginalized communities. It means we have to use the already produced state apparatuses in order to be heard. For example, like immigrants who they are inside or within the legal apparatuses, but they have no right or equal apparatuses, equal right, they should use all the state apparatuses to be legal people, but the equality is not applicable for the immigrants or for the people from below. It means, in one hand, we are within the legal apparatus, but on the other hand, we are outside of legal apparatuses. And how to be heard? We have to produce our noisy sound. It means we have to organize the so-called illegal movement for fighting back the state apparatuses and capitalist corporations. For me, noisy sound has its equal meaning to illegality. Illegality for me is the same of noisy sound. It has no another or different meanings for me. It's almost the same.
What if listening would be illegal, which means that you were not allowed to hear a voice? But what most of the time that I experience is being the voice that people can't hear, the voice that the surrounding won't hear. So sometimes I feel like, if we put it in this way, sometimes I feel like the forbidden voice. Being a female, wanting to do things that is not normally allowed, or not illegal, but culturally not allowed. For example, traveling alone to Europe or to any place, or wanting to do things that are most of the time is for men, not me. Being from a religious family and wanting to do art. These are the things that I have said out loud that I want to do, but most times that I feel like I haven't been listened to, which makes me the forbidden sound, the sound that won't be heard or not allowed to be heard.
The situation about your sexual orientation and your gender is really big topic to discuss about. But my personal experience is horrible, because even now I call queer artist, because even now I don't know and I'm not sure what am I and who am I. And I even choose my artistic name like that, that I just want to minus the identity that they gave me. And yeah, being gay or lesbian or whatever, except being a straight in my country, is totally illegal. And I have had a lot of bad stories in my life when, since I was a small kid in primary, I was feeling different. And depends on which area of Tehran you are living, I guess it's different, was different. And nobody would understand why am I liking girls, why I love a girl. And that all the time made me lose my friends. And even still, till now that I'm saying these words, no one in my house except my sister doesn't know that I had a girlfriend in this country. And yeah, this is a big taboo in my country. Being me is illegal. Whenever I wanted to show my real self, you have to hide your real life.
For me, being a female was always so hard, but because I was from a family that had lots of guys in it, I was always like hanging out with my brothers, with my male friends when I was a little kid. And after I grew up, I noticed that I've been treated in a different way. And it was always a question for me, but why my brother is doing this and it's fine, but I can't. Because like for the past few years when I was a kid, it was all okay. So questions raised in my head, and I was lucky enough to have the internet on my side to be able to read, to search, and the small libraries in my school, the online books that I could read. And I was trying to look for the question that the way that people were looking at me, the way that people were treating me, what was the explanation for this? So I started studying, self-studying gender problems, gender troubles, and sexuality, and those kind of things, which helped me to see that I am not what my culture, my society is seeing me. I can do much more than this. And I always believe as soon as a woman sees what she can do, nothing can stop her. So maybe that's what happened to me. I somehow reached what I am capable of, and I couldn't be stopped after that. I'm not saying that I am completely independent, I am completely free, but this is a work in progress. I am trying to make the thing that was so hard for me, to make it easier for my nieces. I am trying to make my father understand what I am doing. I'm trying to make my brother understand that we have the same rights. We if we have the same chances, we can do the same things.
When coronavirus became a reality for the world, many things from legal being illegal or vice versa. For example, the very basic living skill has become illegal, such as hanging out with your friends. Or another way, keeping your child at home instead of school is legal. So these are the strange rules that in the uncertain time, a new era. But at the same time, I think this virus is a good opportunity for the world who have been obligated to stay at home to better understanding the situation and the struggling of some women. who have been forced to stay at home. And they have been told that they belong to home. So, yeah, if I describe that word, illegal, I can say that it consists of some rules that sometimes create a border to prevent some freedom of choice. For example, to have choice to decide on keeping your pregnancy. Abortion is one of the of our choice as a woman, which is sadly they put it in the illegal category. So I can say that there are some rules that may be so unjust, and we shouldn't be obeyed all the time. So that's illegal to me. That's the definition of illegal.
I think Agamben is right that physical contact for our movement, social movement, is crucial for social well-being. And I would like to say that the social distance today and in the long term would be the social isolation. And I am afraid that we will lose our movement, our social movement, the movement for climate change, the movement for immigrants, the movement for feminism, the movement for like liberty, the movement for like fighting capitalism, or the movement for fighting and combating neoliberalism. I'm really afraid about this social isolation. And on the other hand, if we look at medias, they mainly interested to blame on the immigration or moving of people, the movement of people. And we, like immigrants, are potentially become a threat to the so-called healthy citizens of the European countries or Western countries. I know, I'm pretty sure that social media have been controlled. All the apparatuses have been controlled by state authority or by capital corporations, which they produce surveillance tracks for people. But I think, like film or like cinema, we have blind point, which is the filmmakers or producers of the cinematic techniques. They haven't been thinking about it. They have left for us this blind point. We have to use this possibility of blind point of the cinema and social media and other apparatuses of social media or virtual reality. They are always blind points. We have to use them.
I came to understand was when I would read a book or read an article or see a video online would help me understand that the perspective I have on something is not the only perspective that you can see this thing. That helped me to understand that you can see one thing in so many different perspectives and be open about it, being open about ideas, being open about not being 100% sure of what is this fact. So that helped me to also understand that, okay, my family is having problem with me doing this thing is because they're looking at this thing through this perspective. But if I can show them another perspective, you can always look at one thing in so many different perspectives.
Yeah.
law in the first place. It's a strange premise to begin with. I can legislate my upcoming seconds in algorithms that I don't even have known numbers for. Do you know what comes next? I lend to myself one possibility to imagine, to redistribute images, to glitch what has been given to me to believe in. I lend myself the possibility to imagine. Grounding my carefree, I stand break the line with those who just want to be. I decide this organization. I require lawlessness. I rule breaking. I notice transgression. I institute violation of my imagination. Destruction. Instruction. Destruction. I command. Choice. Liquidification. Potentialism. Strength of breath. Displacementless. Unrestrictfulness.
Faculty of motion. There's no body that moving, that is not capable of moving, or that which is assigned to immobilization. It's not human body. So it seems to me that when we raise questions of borders, we are speaking to this reallocation, this reapportionment, this repartition of the earth between different sorts of species life, if you would. Species life that are in shape, and species life that have to fend for themselves. As well as in some sense, will precisely act as barriers to the turning of this. Racism plays an important part in keeping species separate. But it will produce a kind of thought that is I think all corners of the world should be deprovincialized. And it is at this condition that we will be able to produce kind of critical thought that is at the measure of the challenges we are facing, whether in Germany, in France, or in South Africa for the matter.
First, lick yourself into shape, then sung like animal songs, in a weak voice, leaned over the balustrade, the sarcophagus wall, and already the fist arrows in the pituitary membrane and the kin carnage.